Hello, everyone. Welcome to From the Yarra River to the Mediterranean Sea. This is a new podcast for people who care about Israel, who also care about Palestine, and most of all, for people who care about the freedom, justice, and equality for every person who lives there. My name is Hannah Baker, and I'm joining you from Naam, also known as Melbourne in Australia. I'm about 1 kilometre from the Yarra River in Abbotsford. And in saying that, I want to acknowledge and pay my deepest respect to the traditional owners of this unceded land upon which I'm recording today, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my deepest respects to elders past and present. This was and always will be Aboriginal land. And on the other side of the world, kind of close to the Mediterranean Sea, is Itai. Welcome, Itai.
Thank you. I'm about, 70 kilometres from the Mediterranean here in Jerusalem, where I've been living for the past 6 years, and I'm looking forward to the conversation ahead.
Me too. Do you want to, before we kick off, do you want to just tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and why I'm so excited to be doing a podcast with you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Melbourne and I was a high school teacher there at Adas, at Scopus, at Bialik and at King David, teaching everything from PE to religion and society, Hebrew, Jewish studies, Holocaust, and all the fun subjects. And in 2018, I moved here, and since then I've been the education director at Kids for Peace, which is a youth movement for Israeli and Palestinian teenagers, where I facilitate dialogue between them. I am also a journalist with Plus61J Media, which is a progressive Jewish news site. I'm also an educator on various Gap U programs, a writer for the New Israel Fund, and also a father to two beautiful children, Nava and Eitan, and I'm married to Carm, who was once your babysitter.
She was my babysitter. Can you believe that? She actually remember a time that she gave my dog a bar mitzvah. So, you know, look how far we've all come. So before we get into what this podcast is, what we hope to achieve, I just want to say that the whole reason why this kind of came about is because me and you, Itai, we've kind of always been in each other's lives, but definitely the last few weeks we have really reconnected. Mostly because I am a huge fan of yours. I've followed your posts on Instagram and Facebook for many years. And during these last 5 weeks, I've had so many questions and I started to WhatsApp you and you were like, okay, there's a lot in this. Let's have a call. And over the last 5 weeks, we've spoken on the phone a lot. You've been so kind to me, so patient. I'm just, you know, asking you so many questions. And these calls have been so important for me. They've shaped my views. They've changed my mind. They've challenged me. And I just thought that, you know, I wish everyone could have an Itai Fletcher in their lives. But I know that you can't spend all day speaking to people like me in Australia, answering all their questions. So I really wanted to find a way to amplify your voice, try and get your views out there as much as we can so that people can kind of have an Itai Fletcher in their lives, even if it's just through a podcast. So thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I'm so indebted to you and grateful.
Pleasure.
I want to ask you, Itai, why did you agree to do this? Why did you say yes?
So the reason I said yes is I'm a big fan of yours, Hannah, but I also have a lot of Hannah Bakers in my life who are constantly asking me questions about history, about the news, about what I should believe. And I also, it's hard for me to, you know, do my job and answer all those questions. So I thought maybe if we make this podcast together, it's, like you said, it's a way of answering a lot of questions at the one time. And I want to start off with my bias, because I think, you know, a lot of people that speak on Israel-Palestine say they're being objective, and I'm not objective. So I just want to put that out there in terms of what you're going to get, so people know in advance the place I'm coming from. So if you want to hear why, you know, Israel is only perfect, that's not my worldview. If you want to hear why Palestine is only perfect, it's also not my worldview. I am very much coming from a place that is in favor of compromise and justice and equality for all people that live between the river and the sea. That's also the values of the organizations. where I work, even though I'm only speaking on behalf of myself. And this is really a podcast for Jews on the left. I very much believe in the right of Israel to exist. I very much believe that this should be a home for the Jewish people. It's why I live here. And I think I'm really privileged to be alive at a time where such a state exists. And I don't want that to stop existing. And I also very much want Palestinians to have a home and to have all the freedoms and rights that I hold dear. And that's my bias, I guess, and all the questions that I'm going to answer coming from that bias. It doesn't mean that what I'm saying is right. It's obviously a lot of people will disagree with me. I also disagree with myself sometimes when I listen to things I said a year ago, especially since October 7th. And we'll get into that a bit later. But don't just listen to us, listen to lots of other things. And then see this as kind of like, I don't know, Zionist Anonymous, you know, kind of like a therapy for left-wing Jews in Australia, because that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, and even if you don't identify as being on the left or progressive, I do hope people who have different views are able to listen to this with an open heart and an open mind and are open to being challenged and thinking about this issue in a way that they might not necessarily have before. And if after hearing what we have to say, you still don't agree, that's completely okay. And I think just the ability to consciously listen to other points of views without reacting is really important. I also change my mind all of the time. I don't know if I would call myself a Zionist right now, not because I don't believe in a Jewish homeland. And I go back and forth about this reasoning literally, you know, every day. I don't think I would call myself a Zionist if the state of Israel can only exist at the expense of another group of people. But I guess if there is a way for Jews to live in Israel alongside an autonomous Palestinian people where both peoples are safe and have freedom and equality, then yes, I would say I'm a Zionist. So it's really hard to know what that word even means anymore. But I do want to say something about my role on this podcast. I don't want anyone listening to think that I'm trying to speak on behalf of the whole of the Australian Jewish community or even young Jewish Australians. I'm definitely not doing that and I'm not trying to do that. I can only speak on behalf of my own experiences and opinions. And again, I hope people can hear this without feeling like I'm trying to speak on behalf of them or anyone else. Abby Chatfield made a comment on her Instagram post recently saying basically like, if you want to have a say, then make your own podcast. So I guess I'm just taking her up on that offer and trying to get another Jewish perspective out there, noting very much that this is just one Jewish perspective. But I think it is one that has been silenced by the current hectic, dichotomous, black and white conversations happening right now.
I wanted to ask you, Hannah, you know, you've got a lot of things in your life that you can care about and that are probably far less anxiety causing than what's happening between Israel and Gaza at the moment. So maybe I wanted to begin by asking you a question. Why do you care about this topic? Like it's, you know, you could easily just go on with your daily life in Abbotsford and have your $17 smashed avocados or whatever they do there. Like, why do you care about us?
It's such a good question, Itai. I'm surprised that I care so much about this. If you had said 2 years ago that there was going to be a war in Israel and I'd be making a podcast about it, I would have laughed in your face. But yeah, I do. I care so much. I have so many strong feelings. I'm so confused. I think one of the reasons why I'm so invested in this is because I feel like my whole identity is being questioned. It's very destabilizing. It's a confusing time. And I'm probably very inquisitive in general. And so when things start to feel weird in my body, like, you know, what's going on here? I want to get to the bottom of it. I want to understand. And I probably have been doing this about Israel for many years. As you know, I went to a Jewish school. I had, you know, a very Zionist education. I remember, you know, celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut every year, doing Israeli dances, waving Israeli flags at school. Our whole school had, you know, the Israeli flag everywhere. I was a very proud Zionist. I went to Israel for the very first time when I was 15, when I was in year nine, and I had the best time there. I have family in Jerusalem. I've got my auntie and her 10 kids, so cousins around my age. The first time I went to Israel, I fell in love with it. And I remember coming on the plane home thinking, God, I've got to get myself a job so I can save up and go back. And I did go back many times. I went and lived there for a year in a gap year after school with a left-wing Zionist youth movement, Habonim Dror. I lived on kibbutz for 3 months. I studied in Jerusalem. I spent time up north in Akko, and it was, one of the best years of my life. I loved it. And then when I came back to Melbourne, I was in that youth movement for 2 years. And then when I left the movement, I probably didn't really think about Israel again for ages. I just went on with my life. In 2014, I went on exchange to the Netherlands and met my ex-boyfriend now, he was my first non-Jewish boyfriend. And together we ended up going to Israel at the end of our exchange. And that probably was the first time ever in my life that I started to question my beliefs and what I had learned. And that's because we went on a Breaking the Silence tour in the West Bank. And we can talk about that organization probably in another episode, but it was an experience that I'll never forget. I went into the West Bank with people who had served there during their army service. And it was the first time that I really started to learn about how Palestinians were treated. It was the first time I really learned about what the occupation meant. I saw the checkpoints. I saw the difference between Palestinian communities living on that land and the Jewish settlements who had access to water and lots of, high fences around their communities. And it was just, it was such a wake-up call for me. But on the other side, I was experiencing Israel with someone who wasn't Jewish and seeing it through their eyes. And I felt so proud. Like, Israel is an amazing country. Tel Aviv is so fun. It's so metropolitan. We ate so much hummus. We ate hummus, every single day, and it was amazing. And experiencing Israel through someone's eyes who isn't Jewish brought me a lot of pride as well. So I came back from that trip really confused. And that's probably been sitting there for many, many years. I don't think I've really explored this that much until it's kind of come to a head now. So Itai, I want to ask you, why do you care about what the Australian Jewish community think about Israel? Like, you're not living here anymore. You're obviously Australian and you lived here for a long time, but why do you care about what we think over here?
No, it's true. I am a long way away from the wonderful Caulfield Park and its beautiful eucalyptus trees.
Yes.
And the reason I care is because, I was a teacher in Australia for 15 years at Scopus, at Bialik, at King David. I don't think any of my Adas kids are listening to this podcast. and I also taught at Melton and at Limud and so many other places. And I feel like, as a teacher, I stopped teaching in the classroom, but I personally feel like teaching should never stop. And I really value a lot of my ex-students, and many of them, I'm friends with, and I feel like I still have a responsibility to continue, the education we started in those various places. And I know that even though this is our war, and I'll speak shortly about how it affects us here, this has also been a war for Australian Jews. And I know that a lot of Australian Jews are really struggling at this time with their Jewish identity and their Zionist identity and their place in their workplaces and what they see online and all of those sorts of things. And I feel like I'm placed with my life experiences to maybe speak to some of those questions. And also, conversation is sometimes therapy. And whilst I know there's a Jewish American conversation happening all the time, an Israel American conversation, it's not my conversation because I don't, you know, I can say what's happening at Harvard or Columbia University, but what's happening at Melbourne University or Monash kind of bothers me more. And yeah, and I think this is the role of an educator to continue having these conversations.
Yeah, well, you have definitely been a huge part of my education the last few weeks, and I'm just really excited for others to learn from you through this podcast. So yeah, thank you again. So there is so much to get into, but before we do, I want to ask you a broader question. I was having a conversation with someone a few days ago in real life, not on Instagram, which is rare these days. And while we were having this conversation, this person asked me where I was getting my information from. He basically said that he doesn't believe anything he sees on the news or other media outlets, so why should he believe anything that I was saying? So I guess my question to you is, where do you get your information from, and how can we believe anything that we are reading or seeing, and why should the people listening to this podcast believe what you're saying?
Yeah, so I think I get my news from three sources of information. The first is my own eyes, what I see around me, what people directly say to me, what I experience walking in the streets. The second is obviously news sites and, you know, websites and sort of the mainstream media. And then the last one is history. And I know that sounds weird because history doesn't tell you anything about today, but it tells you a lot about today. And I'll just to unpack that a little bit further. So, you know, the role of a journalist is, you know, they often say, if two people say it's raining and one says it's not raining, you know, my job as a journalist is to open the window and look if it's raining. And I shouldn't report if it's raining or not until my hand gets wet. And the situation here, I'm obviously not in Gaza. I'm not in Kfar Aza. I'm not in Kibbutz Be'eri. So I haven't seen those things with my own eyes. I can talk a lot about what I see in Jerusalem because there's a lot of impacts on the war here, but I'm limited in what I can see with my eyes. So then I go to mainstream news sites. And the thing that's important is there's no such thing as a neutral news site. The Australian Jewish News is not neutral. Al Jazeera is not neutral. The ABC is not neutral. The Age is not neutral. Sky News is not neutral. If anyone says, just watch this one news site and you'll know the truth, then that's propaganda. You can only ever find out the whole picture by reading multiple news sources. In terms of, you know, the most watched Palestinian news site is Al Jazeera. I think that's probably no surprise to anyone. Most watched Israeli news site is N12. It's kind of like the equivalent of Channel 9 news. So I obviously watch both of them a lot. And then I have a series of websites that I read that span the Israeli political spectrum and also both pro-Fatah and pro-Hamas news sites from the Palestinians. I've been learning Arabic for 3 years as well, so I try and listen to what I can in Arabic, or sometimes I do it through Google Translate if it's a written article, because I think it's really important to read, you know, multiple sources. And I'll put some links into this, into the episode description for people to have those new sites. But yeah, I think for people that are not here, it's really important to read widely.
Mm. So if I'm being honest, most of the information I'm getting is from Instagram, and I'm following quite a few Palestinian reporters who are literally just taking their iPhones and their cameras and uploading stories and posts showing what is happening in Gaza right now. And they're literally just going to places that have been bombed and filming people pulling out bodies after body from the rubble. Have you seen that on Instagram?
Yeah, like Wizard Basan and Biplestia, and I think a lot of people they've got millions
Motaz.
Of followers.
Yeah.
So I follow all those accounts, and yeah, I think it's really important to see the stories that they're sharing, and you know they're heartbreaking, obviously, and even the things that are not political. Like I remember Basan shared one. Of just how Palestinians eat in Gaza. And, you know, talking about how there's no gas and electricity now. So they they only can cook on wood, you know, like our ancestors cooked thousands of years ago. So you see all these pots with like these wooden fires underneath them with oil in the pots, and they're making falafel because, you know, she was explaining how, you know, Palestinians have to give up a lot during this war, but the one thing they're not willing to give up on is falafel. And she showed like these massive pots of falafel, how they were making in one of the places where everyone was displaced in the south of Gaza now. And it was, you know, that's something you're never going to get on a news site. And on the one hand, you know, Al Jazeera or CNN might say, well, that's not newsworthy that Palestinians ate falafel. But to me, that's like just as important a part of the story as, you know, the death toll and what's happening with the hostages, and because that's people's lived experience. And I think so many times people see Israel as Palestine as like sort of some sort of chess game, where it's like, well, if you move this piece, will this happen? And, you know, people strategize and they talk about it as if it's like some sort of puzzle that needs to be solved. And it's not that. It's human lives. And, you know, in my own journalism, I try and share stories of evacuees that have moved to Jerusalem and what they're doing here and the volunteering efforts. And I think it's so important to, if you want to understand the story beyond the headlines, you need these human stories. And I think Instagram's a great place for that. Obviously, there's fake, and I'll get into how to deal with the fake stuff a bit later. But like, it's not bad to look at these stories, because I think they do something that a lot of mainstream journalists don't do, which is give just a personal story of how this affects my life. And I think that builds empathy for the people sharing those stories.
Can we just go back to the fake stuff, because that same person I was talking about just before said to me, when I showed him, for example, Motaz's Instagram page, he said to me, how do you know that's not Hamas propaganda? How do you know that Motaz isn't a part of Hamas and uploading fake videos as, you know, basically propaganda?
So look, fake happens, obviously, and it's unfortunately, you know, with AI and the various technologies, it's very easy to make fake videos look very real these days. And there's also, let's just say, widespread disbelief about, you know, in Israel, there's widespread disbelief about the death toll in Gaza. It's very common for people not to accept the numbers that come out of the Hamas-run health ministry. And there's also widespread disbelief about October 7th in general. You know, there's some people who say only soldiers were attacked, that they deny the rapes and the beheading of babies and the, you know, a lot of the sort of more gruesome details. You know, like I often say, if the same news story is on every website, it probably happened. So let's say, are there rockets being fired from Gaza into Israel now? So yeah, I saw a few friends posting Instagram videos of a rocket being fired over their house in Tel Aviv last night. But the fact that I didn't just see one, I saw a dozen. And I saw it on the news, and I saw it, you know. So once I see it in multiple places, yes, it might have different narratives and different explanations, but no one can deny that a rocket was fired on Tel Aviv last night. And I'd say the same extent, I don't know exactly how many people have been killed in Gaza, but the fact that I've seen hundreds of videos from multiple sources, even on Israeli news sites and on Palestinian news sites, of, you know, entire tall buildings in rubble and thousands of refugees, you know, moving from the north to the south. I can't deny that once I see it everywhere. I can question, obviously, the narrative and the interpretation of why it's happening, but the time I get suspicious is when I see something on only one Instagram page and I don't see it anywhere else. And then I start asking questions. And I also look at the track record of the person who's sharing it. So if it's a person that shares something and then tomorrow says, you know, I shared something yesterday and actually that was wrong, I have a lot of respect for their credibility. But if someone's sharing something where it's every day, you know, against Israel or against Palestine or against Hamas, but never sort of critiquing their own side or never, you know, raising questions that might challenge their narrative, I'll still watch their content, but I'll be more suspect of it because I'll think that it is you know, designed to be propaganda.
So interesting. And it actually reminds me of something. When I was working at the firm where I did my graduate year, I was working on a pro bono project which aimed to like sift through news articles during the civil war in Sri Lanka. And at that time, like during the civil war, there were numerous reports of bombings and attacks, but it was really difficult to work out what could be verified as the truth. So years later, I did my grad year in 2018. My job, along with heaps of other people that were doing it as well, was to go through media outlets and articles and try and find multiple sources that reported on the same incident. And once I'd found like five or six articles that reported on that exact same incident, it was more likely that that particular incident had in fact happened.
So this is why I said my last news source is history. A lot of the way I can spot fake news is through history. So what I mean by that is I know what's happened in previous Gaza wars. I know how they were fought. I've read reports about them. I've read military strategies. I've read about how the IDF chooses their targets. I've read Palestinian responses to them. I've read what happens to the water situation, etc. So a lot of the way I know something is true or false is based on my reading and knowledge of the subject in total. For me, it would be very hard to pick up fake news between Russia and Ukraine, because all the tools that I would use for Israel-Palestine, I couldn't use for Russia-Ukraine because I don't speak Russian. I don't know the history. I don't know the geography. I don't know what's happened in their previous conflict. So I would be at a loss there because I don't have the context of it. So I think history is also a really important tool to use for verifying what's real and what's not real as well.
Mm, yeah. Okay, do you want to talk about what this podcast isn't?
Yeah, so we're not going to give you a solution. We don't have solutions. We are not military experts. We're not politicians. And we, maybe I'll speak for myself, I'm in a lot of pain at the moment. I'm seeing a lot of suffering all around me. I have friends who have been called up to the army. I speak to their partners who are home with two, three, four children and don't know when their partners are going to come home. I know people whose children have been kidnapped. I have Palestinian friends whose loved ones have been killed in Gaza. So I don't have a solution to this. I obviously want it to end like everyone else, and I want it to end in a way that gives us all peace and freedom. But yeah, if you want, you know, a podcast where you're going to find solutions, this is not it. What you're going to hear is pain, is thoughts, is sort of an honest conversation between two Jews who care about this place and its future.
Yeah, I agree. But I also wanted to say that I don't think that we should be expected to have solutions. You know, a lot of I've been seeing online and in conversations that I've been having with people, like, you know, well, what's the other option? What should be happening if you think that this isn't the answer? And my answer to that is, it's not my responsibility to come up with a solution. I'm a family lawyer living in Melbourne. I know nothing about military tactics. I'm not a politician, thank God for that. But I also don't think that that means I can't have an opinion. I can't ask questions. I don't want to do what some people have said and just, you know, shut the fuck up. If you don't know, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm a human. I'm a human being. We all are. And I think we should be having these conversations. We should be thinking about what is right and wrong, what, you know, trying to come up with other creative solutions, whether they are realistic or not. Because I think the more people who are thinking about this and talking about it and saying, hey, you know, carpet bombing and killing thousands of people doesn't seem right to me, I think the more people who think that way, the more likely it is that that's going to stop happening. So, yeah, we don't have the solutions, but we definitely have a lot to say, and we're feeling a lot.
Yes. you had some hesitations with the name. Why did you have hesitations with it?
Yeah, I definitely did have some hesitation. I know that From the River to the Sea is a pro-Palestinian chant. We're all familiar with it at the moment. From the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, Palestine will be free. And there's been a lot of talk about it. The first time I heard it, I was kind of like, how could I attend a protest while people are calling for the ethnic cleansing and genocide of Jewish Israelis who live there? But then I started to speak to people who were going to these protests, and I asked, you know, what's the deal with this chant? What does it mean to you? And to so many people, it definitely doesn't mean, you know, the destruction of Israel or the killing of Jews who live there. I know that it is in the Hamas charter. I know that there are definitely anti-Semites jumping on the bandwagon and who would like to see Jews erased from this earth. But I want to put my trust in people who are good, who just want to see a free Palestine and a free Israel for everyone who lives there. And the other thing is, I just, you know, I wanted to make it clear that I'm not, well, we aren't trying to appropriate this chant and make it our own. I see it more as standing in solidarity with everyone who wants peace. So I want to apologize if it causes offense to anyone. It's definitely not our intention. And I just wanted to explain, yeah, the intention behind what I think is a great podcast name.
And you, I mean, you are located in Abbotsford, so you're actually not far from the Yarra River there. And yeah, exactly. I think the name of the podcast really explains that this is a conversation of people that live on the banks of the Yarra and people that live on the shores of the Mediterranean, and a conversation between two of us. But obviously we'll try and bring in more voices as time goes on.
I just want to add something. So I was talking to a friend of mine about, what I had just said, and they were saying that, like, she feels uncomfortable with this because it's similar to saying something anti-Semitic or racist and then someone calling that out and then them responding, oh, well, I didn't mean it that way, so therefore it's not. So I want to just say that how I'm interpreting this chant and my, like, you know, quote unquote reclaiming of it is not to say that others who hear it shouldn't feel triggered or they don't, you know, they can still see it as anti-Semitic, and that's, you know, everyone is entitled to their view. I guess the way that I'm trying to use it is by, like, reclaiming it, sort of. I'm not sure if it's my place to reclaim it, given that it's for the Palestinians, but I think it's just helpful for me to, like, try and be part of the, you know, like, pro-Palestinian autonomy freedom movement, because I do believe in that, at the same time as believing in a safe, autonomous place for Jews. And so, you know, by me saying, you know, from the Yarra River, sorry, from the Yarra River, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, we are all free. Like, I think that's the way that I'm able to hold both of those truths at the same time, even though I know that there are people who don't mean the same thing. So if this sounds like something that is interesting to you, stick with us. We're still finding our feet on what works and what doesn't. The most important thing is that if you do have questions, either to me or Itai, please send us an email from theyarra@gmail.com.au. Please don't send us hate mail, but I guess it's your right and prerogative to do that if you wish. Maybe we'll read them out as a hate mail section. Who knows? But we do really want to hear from you. And yeah, looking forward to exploring it together. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Shalom.